So we'll open the meeting for May 9th. It's 6 o'clock. And the first item on the agenda is the roll call. So that's the secretary.
Okay. Kit?
Yes.
Malcolm?
Yes.
Robin?
Here.
Bill?
Yes.
Jim?
Yep.
Margaret's not here. Harold?
Yeah.
Gordy?
Here.
Jack?
Yeah.
And Grace?
Here. And we do have a quorum, and Malcolm will be our voting member in place of Ron Wright, who no longer is on the committee. So he will be one of our voting members at this point. We don't have the minutes ready for the April 11th meeting, so we'll dispense with that at this point and have it at the next meeting. One thing that's not on the agenda, we do need to take care of. We do need a vice chairperson. So do I just look around the room and point at somebody, or is there somebody going to volunteer? Let me say this. I anticipate, hopefully, that we should be able to conclude this committee. The last meeting, I would hope, would be in August. I would like to see it done before then if we can, but I using the August 8th as our as a deadline date for finishing up what we've done and going on to other things. Unless you folks want to keep going till
two more years,
or no, it's not quite 2 years. So anyway, but we do need somebody as a possibility as a vice chair, just to have somebody that can, if I can't be there. So that was the Jack, you had your hand up.
I want to comment on the August ending thing. I know that Goodwin has been doing quite a detailed comparison between, I know she's identified some which she heard to lay it out, but I know she's been doing work on that, and seems to be the report that there's more that could be done.
Okay, well, I had hoped I was going to get with her this last week, but I'm going to call her. I thought I'd see her this week and see if she and I can get together so I can see where, just what it is she has, and we can sort of plan. Like I say, there's nothing magic to that date. I'm just saying that I think we need to start to figure if we can start concluding. The other thing that I don't know is if there's any funding for the next fiscal year that we have for this year, and I was going to ask David that. I don't know what's happened in the budgeting. I know he had to reduce his material and services budget, but I don't know whether that included the $5,000 or whatever the amount was that we had.
I would say my guess would be no, because this was ran, it's 2 years, and the budget's already, you know, tight and gotten cut as it was, so I wouldn't, if I was to guess, I would say we probably didn't budget anything in for this, because the order was 2 years.
But
it comes out of
the economic development fund.
Does it?
Yes.
Has the budget committee provided money?
I'm not sure. I can check.
I think we got a lot of economic funds cut from us.
Okay.
That's
another issue. We won't. If I would anticipate, we wouldn't have any money after July 1st. So we'd be operating without funding. I'm assuming we'd still have Ann and the staff to come to the meeting.
Somebody
get
me here.
Yeah. Somebody got
to
meet
here. Jack. We got to work out what happened with the 5,000.
We can probably. We didn't spend anything. I think there was some copy we gave Kit. I think that paid back, didn't you, on some some copy work? And I think Grace, did you?
I didn't. I wound up not asking for it. I wound up doing it by hand.
And I don't know if there was anybody. I don't think anybody else did. I think we just had some copying, and that was it.
So we should have
$4,000 at least. Well, but that's only going to be there for this end of this fiscal year. That doesn't carry over.
We know it's got all the meetings, right? It's for public.
Well, yeah, that's the other part. We don't know the cost of the meetings.
Yeah, I'll have
pay everybody a $500
bonus. Yeah. And they just mentioned the fact that they do notice the meetings, and it does cost for that. So.
Yeah. I'll do it again.
But we'll get a number.
We should have to get down here and where we are.
Yeah. No.
Why?
Yeah.
For the party, you know.
Yeah.
I make a recommendation that Kit be the vice chair.
Pardon?
There's a motion. Motion that Kit be the vice chairperson. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Do you have any kind of speech you'd like to make? That's enough. Thank you.
She would have to
accept,
I would
think.
Here
for
Okay, no more discussion. All those in favor of Kit being the vice chairperson, raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Congratulations. Tremendous campaign. Those lawn signs were really great. Those lawn signs along the highway were really great.
Now I gotta go pick them all up.
No girls can resign.
Yeah. You don't have too many ideas.
Yeah. Okay, our next item on the agenda that's actually on the agenda is the proposed Woodlot Resource Zone change to RLDC, and that's Grace. And Grace did provide us with a paper. Excellent job.
I didn't think so. I was told.
No, I think it was very well done.
I've been doing the outside.
Oh, good.
Did you see what I was talking about there? Okay.
It was so well written, Grace, that the maps were kind of extra.
Oh,
it was very clear.
Good. Yeah. Good. It really was.
Great. I'll need one original for them.
Okay.
How many do we keep?
Oh, can I get reimbursed?
These are all the same. Yeah.
I get reimbursed.
Are they all just one, or do you have several?
I have two maps.
Okay, one's private land, private timber.
One's private land, and one is zoned.
Okay, so we have more than that here.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
All the way around.
We're not sending it around. So we have another one coming?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's really chill.
We got him.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
He knows that now.
He dreams a lot.
Okay. So, Grace, do these replace what you had in your report, or are they additional?
I think I might have just enlarged them, but I kept getting some when I did print out my maps on the report. I tried to find better. I think they're what I did in the report.
You got three more maps in there. We actually have four maps in there.
That's because I just took an insight and tried to make it clear.
Okay.
It was late
enough. Oh, yeah. Timber company properties and ownership. You have timber companies and ownership inset.
Yeah.
And then you have, like, a federal
timber company.
Yeah, 32.
Okay.
And timber company properties
and
ownership.
Yeah, you can see it on the timber maps. The keys are terrible. So, yeah, anyway.
There's one of the small acres for, I think, something with the light green and the dark green that were government. I couldn't tell the BLM and Forest Service.
You asked, see, that was another thing. On the big one you've got, on the land owners. Okay, the brown is going to be BLM. The green is National Forest. The pink is county land.
Which one? Are you looking at this one?
I'm looking at this one. This is the ownership one. And then the kind of yellowish orange, that's state land. So the, and the yellow is private.
I thought the county owned a piece. Oh, actually, it's in the wilderness area.
Those are all the properties owned by the timber company. And when you look at it, which I never really seen it until I did this, is that they're all kind of crunched in between the public ownership.
Mm-hmm.
They don't intrude much into the private ownership at all, except just on the edges. And you can see that yellow is pretty clear, except for BLM is kind of, interspersed throughout it.
You know, from a historical perspective, when the county wound up with a lot of ownership of timberlands, mm-hmm. about 30-some thousand acres. They had actually more, but I can tell you back in the 50s and the 40s, you could walk into the county commissioner's office and pay the secretary a certain amount of money, and you would then own the lands.
Ooh.
And so a lot of lands moved from the public ownership into private. And then they set a law out that required that if the county was to sell any of their forest land, they'd have to have a vote of the people. So the county can't sell any lands, any of their forest land, without having a vote of the people. So what you see in some of these may have been some county lands at one time that were somebody in the private sector was able to pick up for a reasonable price.
These are just outlines.
That's amazing.
250 an acre?
Land was
so, Grace, let me ask, are we looking at your change in your report? You have a recommendation that you're saying proposed changes?
Here's something illustrating what I'm talking about, why it's important to, why I think it makes sense, anyway, to divide up just the distribution of the parcel sizes from my database, which I didn't put into the other one. Let's give you a... I put out my little pad of paper to take notes on it, but...
But you've done all of this, and you've made on page 4, you have what you call proposed changes, which I'm assuming would be your recommendations.
Yeah.
And so my thought is that people, you have some more comment to make in regards to that. If not, we could open it up for folks to ask questions. And I don't know if staff has had a chance to look at this, but then for the committee to decide on whether to take an action tonight or mull over the... And what we're talking about is just that page 4, the proposed changes.
Page 1, 2, kind of bullet 1, 2, 3.
Okay.
Basically, I don't know if I made any other fourth
or fifth. No, I think that's all. So bottom line would be, what does the committee want to have happen to accept the recommendation that Grace has given us and submit that to the board for recommended changes to the woodlot resource zones, or not accept it, or accept it with some other changes that somebody may have or comments you have, and to include the maps is what my thought would be. So we'll open it up for questions or comments in regards to this report.
How come? I thought you said the main thing we're voting on is page 4, and I'm looking at it only has 3 pages, so.
It's just document.
Yeah, 4 is just kind of a.
My page 4 has woodlot resource characteristics, woodlot ownership characteristics,
yeah,
and proposed changes. Oh, you're looking at the wrong one.
I should have just put
it. Do you want to look at this one?
Sure. I have an extra.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I didn't print it. It was like 12 pages.
Yeah, it wasn't actually proposing it to write summary on that last one. Really, it was re-justifying the further justification of the proposed changes.
So we really...
The first page is really...
excuse me, the first... The 1, 2, and 3 would be the items that we would pick an action on. But my suggestion is that we would include this whole document as a part of whatever it is we do. But if you folks have some question or some more clarification, Jack?
Yeah, we're open for general discussion right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, as I see this, and harking back to Senate Bill 100, the objectives were to preserve and protect resources necessary to save two primary industries, at that time being timber, woodlot resource reservation, aimed to preserve timber. And what? We've got 30 years, we got all this woodlot resource which has not been acquired by timber companies.
Oh, right. Wait, what you're looking at is private ownership.
Yeah.
And on the other map, it shows you the woodlot resource zone, which is this little thing here. So you get the very, like, 6% of the forest zone. 6 or 7% of it. But compared to the whole county, it's probably more like 1%.
Well, woodlot was really to create a transition from the the forest zone to people land and still provide and still have an opportunity for people to build houses and manage whatever the land is and in smaller parcels. So it's sort of that transition zone that the forest zone is the real preservation zone of maintaining that high quality commercial type forest lands, and then the transition down into the rest of it. So that was the original intent of the woodlot.
Right. And yet it's still treated like it's a commercial forest land, and it's not. The soils are not as good. The parcel sizes are small, and the national and the state lands are small, and we've got all these mixed uses. Wildlife preservation, scenic beauty,
watershed
protection, and so forth.
Well, that's been the case. Where's the magic number 20 acres come from as opposed to 5 or 10?
Well, the reason is now is that because the average parcel is under 20 acres already, and so to say 20 is consistent, 20 is an average of a small woodlot, you know. 66%, I did a quick thing on that little book about almost 66% of the parcels are 20 acres and below. And the average size is 22.25 acres. And the median, let's see what I have.
40.
There's only 150 parcels with more than 40 acres, with 40 acres or more, which could be divided. So we're talking very few, maybe 75 new parcels.
And it still makes it transitional.
And it still makes it transitional. It goes from 2.5 residential to 5 residential to 20 to 80. So it also tends to be closer to the roads and closer to the newer subdivisions, so it's more difficult for any property owner to get a home there because they have to go through the template test, which means that they, depending on the quality of the soil, they have to have 3 homes within a quarter mile or 1/4 by 1 mile template that where the houses were built before 1993, or anywhere from 7 to 11 parcels that were created prior to 1993. And very often they can't, I mean not very often, but occasionally they cannot meet that and therefore they can't put a home on. So it really, the rules for the true forest may prohibit people from building homes on the smaller parcels.
And you use Mike Snyder's this report as part of that as well. So, Malcolm?
Yeah, I just personally feel like if somebody's got a lot that's smaller than 20 that exists already, I don't see any reason for them not to build a house on it. For instance, my 5 acres with a lot of resources, he's not going to manage it for timberland. So there's not really a whole lot else he can do with it. I'm in favor of shrinking. I'm in favor of saying existing lots, I don't care what size they are, if they're buildable, you know, if they meet all the other criteria, you know, you can get a septic and a well and all that stuff, access.
I like that too. But as far as subdividing, I think 20 acres, anything.
So it is transition. You don't want 5 acres.
No, but there are 5 acre pieces out there.
Exactly. Right.
And those should be allowed, I mean, if they're existing ones, and if they could meet the criteria for perk tests for septic and wells, then they should be able to be built fine.
Yeah, see, there's a whole total of 163 acres already under 5 acres.
163 acres or lots?
Lots.
517
acres. So, and then under 10 acres is 132, so that makes it 295 parcels already under.
Some of them had existing homes on it. The few that are sitting there vacant that are stuck vacant.
Well, 95 out of 163 have homes on them. Might have to be a few more because last year's data.
95 out of the 163? Okay.
63, right. And then the 5 to 10 is 87 out of 132. Mm-hmm. Some of those may not be able to get homes on them because they can't meet the template test.
Exactly.
And you're stuck with template test.
For that zone, exactly. Because of that 1993 requirement.
Bob had a question.
Do you have a question?
Questions, observations. Because what you're proposing is the same argument that we had from 81 to 85 when the state forced us to rezone and downzone all this stuff. And with the new changes in the OARs saying that forest land has to be identified based on the soil, not on the development pattern or anything else. And I see nothing in here that talks about the soils or the quality of that. Because one of the things that I see in here, your proposal is to keep the stocking requirement. And
yeah, that was to encourage.
And I understand that, but knowing the lands here in Justine County, especially in the woodlot, there's a lot of lands that are below 50 cubic feet per acre, and forcing people to stock them when it won't grow trees doesn't make any sense. So I would say if you're going to keep a stocking requirement, then you want to set a threshold of when it's going to be reasonably expected that they're going to be successful. Because the problem that we've always had with the state is they say they're going to protect forest land, but then they won't define what forest land is. It just says you've got to base it on soils, and when you look at what has been done in LUBA appeals and things like that, it's very similar to what they did with urbanization. They say you've got to protect it, but they won't tell you what it is. What LUBA said is clearly if it's below 20 cubic feet per acre per year, it's you can almost say that it's not forest land. If it's above 80 cubic feet per acre per year, they think, well, yeah, you can pretty much say that it is forest land. But the area between 20 and 80, they say it's almost like a case-by-case basis. And so with no soil component in here, I don't see how we're going to get much traction on this. Because when you read 2229, it talks about rezoning those properties that were so miszoned in the original adoption. And here I don't see any rezonings unless you're going to create a new zone that is quasi-forest land as transitional areas. Because when you read the rest of the text of 2229, it starts talking about ESEEs, environmental, energy, social, all those impacts have to be analyzed of what this change is. And I didn't see anything in 2229 that says it eliminates the requirements of the rest of the state law for houses. Now, I agree with you, in the woodlot, this was supposed to be a transitional, and you're supposed to be able to build a house no matter what if you're in woodlot. And the state took that away from us. But I don't see anything in 2229 that would give anything back to us on that. So I'm not seeing where this would implement it. It's just a repackaging of the original analysis that was done in the late 70s and early 80s, and then when Mike did it again, yes, it talks about parcelization, but it doesn't talk about what is forest land and what is not. It just says, here we have a settlement pattern, because we have the same thing synonymously in farm resource that we have in woodlot resource. You go out here to Jerome Prairie, we've got all that farm resource, and has houses, and most of the lots were 10 to 15 acres, but the state said, okay, it's got to be a farm parcel, 80 acres, the 40,000 minimum income and all that. So I'm not seeing where this analysis does the 2229 or the new 3615 without a soil component in it. And I think you need to put something in there and say, if it's below 50, by God, it's not forest land.
Well, the problem I see now, I had thought I would ask the committee to ask Cody to do just give me the soils names just for the farm, for the forest development source, and then kind of try to see what the total percentage is. Because otherwise, there's so many soils. The problem with that is that the table 10 only lists the so-called commercial soils that give a figure as to how many cubic feet per year it produces. And so there's a lot of soils that have no figure whatsoever, and Luba said that you can't assume that it's under 50 cubic feet a year, or it's not commercial just because
it didn't show up.
Even though it's real obvious in the soils book that it's not commercial, because that's what they said. Yeah. But Luba doesn't like our system. So anyway, it occurred to me that by this point I was exhausted. I just took Michael's
car,
our stuff, and that is what the
session
is for.
Roger. I'm sorry, were you done?
Yeah.
Okay, Roger.
So I'm kind of tailing on with what Bob kind of talked about. So just for some clarification for me, is your proposal that the county pursue House Bill 2029 and do that? Because Woodlot Resource is still a forest zone. So we couldn't come in and say you got to get rid of the 80-acre size, lot of record. That's still under state law, forest zone. So I agree with Bob. Are we talking pursue 229 and we rezone this to a completely different zone? Because Woodlot Resource is still a forest zone.
I really like the term Woodlot Resource because it really defines what people actually do on it. Have small woodlots, have their home. They're there, they can take care of their land better when they live on it, and so forth. But as far as the legal technicalities, I had not thought the whole thing would have to, the whole zone would have to be changed or renamed. Maybe technically the county would have to do that if it wants to get to where I'm proposing.
Well, if we were to go through 229, that's what we would be doing. We'd be taking a relook at this. And so I agree with Bob. We're talking, we're coming up with a new zone. We're not calling it Woodlot Resource anymore because that's a forest zone under statutes, and that's an 80-acre lot size requirement, lot of record, large tract. Those are all how you get those in the forest zone. So that's, I'm just trying to clarify if that's what you're saying here. You're recommending that the county pursue House Bill 229 to look at the Woodlot Resource zone.
That is basically, okay. I
haven't
considered changing.
That's just what I'm
trying
to clarify.
I need to clarify something. I think 2229 is so far out in the future, it'd be better to tag on to 3615. Mm-hmm. And I guess the thought would be this committee could recommend that, and that's, we haven't done anything at this point in regards to House Bill 3615. I know there's discussion going on, and this 3615 includes the regional area of the Jackson, Douglas, and Josephine, and it's passed one committee already. It's going to make it through, it looks like. There's about $350,000 of state money that's going to be available to the three counties to do some of the data work and things like that. Now, whether that's enough money, I don't know, but it would seem to me that if we took what you're talking about here and what Roger and Bob have said, it would be better for the committee to make a recommendation to Josephine County Commissioners that they actively pursue participation in 3615, which then puts them into the movement, because I don't think 2229 is going to get anywhere, and I think they've now moved everything into
based on that, they made the rules for 2229, so it's an uncertain process.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I say,
they're waiting for somebody to start,
state,
so they can
state,
do,
but the state is really looking at the 3615. They've already bought into it. Whitman has bought into it.
So then it's just them counties?
No, 3615 is giving the authority to the counties to enter into three counties to enter into an interdepartmental agreement to define agricultural and forest lands. It's so similar to 2229, but it's using the three counties, up to three counties. It could be, if Josephine didn't get involved, I can tell you Jackson and Douglas will. And so there's a discussion going on, Jack.
Excuse me, but it seems that Johnson County is so unique. It's different from Jackson County, and it's different from Douglas County. And
that's going to be the challenge.
This particular thing is unique, I think, to Johnson County. You know, and actually, I wasn't thinking in terms of either hospital as much. I mean, that was a tag. It was kind of what I think would be realistic on the ground, which would make sense.
Yeah.
This is where we were 30 years ago.
Therefore, it can't be done.
Yeah, Jack has his hand up. And then Bill and then Kit.
This sounds remarkably complex. In the day, a very specific plan for what should. So I'm inclined to recommend that we create a subcommittee and have a work on it for a month. The next meeting, we have a proposal. Malcolm modified the proposal here in a very good way already, and I hear a modified proposal to build a lot of this on the soil criteria test rather than philosophy.
Well, it could be a combination, but I know that philosophy was tried before, and looking at the statutes, if you just propose a text amendment to the Rural Land Development Code and send it up to DLCD, it's not going to take but a flash to come back and say,
Don't violate state law, and too bad. Bill had his hand up.
How do we see ourselves different from Jackson?
Well, serpentine influence is the big one right off the bat. Mm-hmm. Douglas gets more rain than us. Jackson County's got a lot higher forest elevations, so
mm-hmm.
we're similar
valleys,
but different in the same sense.
They've got wider valleys and lower hills, whereas Jackson County valleys tend to be narrower, you know, so that limits
and steeper.
It limits growth, it limits development, which is great for those of us who live here. But I
do need to. I think by working into this regional part as far as defining, and if the two regions can agree that even though we have to work because there may be some likeness, that we can agree that Josephine County has this and that Jackson County has this, and as a region this is what it ought to be, the state has to accept that.
Right.
And that's why I think there's some value. But I like Jack's idea, if there's some people that are willing to sit down between now and June to sort of come up with something. I think that would be worthwhile. Is that something?
What is the timeline, do you think, on? Is it 36-15?
I'll have to find out, but I heard
it's moving.
It's moving along. Well, it's already passed out.
I would say that Bob, I think, is correct in that you're spinning your wheels. Everything you're saying has been said before.
I know.
And especially if it goes to 28, you were correct, 20 acres. You might get people to go for 40, but 20 acres, somebody's going to feel it for sure. I mean, they're going to... And plus, there's the other thing, well, why would we deal with this now when this 3615 is in the works? So especially if it's on a fairly fast track, that's going to give a lot more flexibility that would allow us to do this without having to go through LUBA and appeals and all that other stuff, which I can guarantee you're going to go through.
Well, believe me, I didn't do this with the belief that it would actually pass.
Wow. See, kind of my vision using 3615, even though the three counties need to agree on it, there can be gradations within the system that you can have different lot sizes based on some soil types or some existing land use patterns. So you can have zones that can apply here that you could see if they'll apply in Douglas or in Jackson, but it may not. Just like we have a difference between forest commercial and woodlot resource, and we can have another one down below that one that has the 20 acre, because the original woodlot resource said if you were adjacent to forest commercial, the minimum lot size was 40. If you were not adjacent to woodlot or to forest commercial, the minimum lot size was 20. And if you had some very poor soils on the property, you could create two lots between 2 and 10 as long as there was a balance of a 20. So it had those gradations that was trying to recognize the adjoining uses. So those patterns were there, plus it had that soil component. So give you some stuff saying, if it's so bad that it won't grow anything, then why are you even forcing a 20-acre on it? And there was the provision that says, and if it qualified for a legal lot, you got a house. And that's what most people are concerned about. Because I don't know many of anybody here in Southern Oregon that's going to buy Woodlot Resource to just grow trees and not live on the science. You're not going to live in town and go out and manage a Woodlot Resource parcel. It just doesn't happen. So let's be honest, a house is a given as a part of this, and I think that's something that we can sell to the three counties.
I think, I guess the question is going to be whether we want to create a subcommittee to do some more study and come back to us on June, in the June meeting, in relationship to this in regards to 3615.
Or do we do so?
Okay. Who would be willing to volunteer to sit on that? Malcolm, would you?
I would like a little discussion first, because sure. I don't know if we make a recommendation, is that in place of 3615,
no.
or is it just
a good relationship
to the county commissioners that they can take the 30?
Yeah.
I'd be willing to.
Yeah, I think we need, and I'll tell you why, because in talking with the Jackson County commissioners, they're not convinced that Josephson County is going to be willing to participate. That's the message that's coming out of this county, is that this county is not interested in 3615.
What have the commissioners done? Have they
nothing.
Signed a statement or
nothing.
Or
we've listened in on their group meetings with Honeycutt and everybody that was there, all the representatives. We've had our comments in, and I think they're just sitting back waiting to see how it's panning out. We've had recommendations on language changes. We've been in contact with Douglas County. I think the commissioners are just waiting to see how it ultimately plays out.
Well, I just have to tell you, the reaction from the Jackson County commissioners in relationship to the Josephson County commissioners is they're not planning on Josephson County participating. They're preparing that they may have to go with Douglas County. And I'll tell you, that comes from a very source.
Did you say there'd be three counties together?
No. Well, that was originally, there were actually three. Jackson County, in based upon the discussions they've had or not had, are asking that the language give them some flexibility that there can be two counties, with anticipation that Josephine isn't going to be a player, so that they could go ahead and regionalize with Douglas County.
Well, Josephine doesn't get involved, we can't do it by ourselves later. We'd have to get coos or something.
The new language in here is that was added is under the Section 5, it says, for the biennium beginning July 1, 2013, the Land Conservation Development Commission shall, upon receipt of a petition filed by adjoining counties, select at least one but not more than two additional regions for which to consider. That's over and above this one now. And with that language, the reason that language is in there is because Klamath County wants to be a player in it, and they can't tie to Jackson County, so it looks like what they're going to do is do a regional with Deschutes County, and so that's why that language is in here, is to give Klamath and Deschutes the ability to do something later on. So where I'm trying to get to is that it would be worthwhile for us to, as a committee or a subcommittee, to do a little bit of research, get back to us, this committee, then make a recommendation to the Board of County Commissioners as to how we feel they should be participating. The issue is the dollar. Again, everybody's concerned, Jackson County's concerned with that $350,000. They think it's maybe light based upon the criteria that they're asking for in here that has to be done to come up with the standards. But that's the only issue that I think Josephine has is, you know, what's those dollars? Where are we going to, if we don't have the dollars, because they don't have the money locally to do it. So that's, I think that's the only concern that the Josephine County Commissioners have.
Is that for?
That's for all three counties.
So what is the timeline?
Huh?
Is there a timeline set?
Yeah, it's 2 years, I believe.
Well, I mean for Josephine County to commit.
Well, I think once this passes, Jackson County is going to be ready to go. They've got to be committed, because I think Jackson and Douglas are ready to go.
So that'd be in this session.
Yes. They will. There will be an action done before the end of this session.
And that session ends in June?
June. Probably June, I'm assuming.
I was talking to Vic before this got out of committee, and his big concern was getting 3615 out of committee, which they accomplished. Because as far as in the general legislature, there's a lot of support for it, according to Representative Vic. Both Democrat and Republican, so it's not a partisan issue, if you will, and there's widespread support. So we expect that this gets out of committee, which it has, but it will become reality.
So can, it was set up for two counties, but the door is open for three?
No, it's set up for three.
Oh.
But it had to be all three of them, and so Jackson County is asking, I can't find the language in here, Jackson County was asking that there be some flexibility.
Oh, so they couldn't get
so that Josephine couldn't kill it because they didn't want to kill it.
Why can't Klamath do it?
They won't let them. And I don't know what kind of deals were struck, because Bill Garrard was the lead on this out of Klamath County, and Klamath was not included in it. So it was Sal Escobal and Bill Garrard are the lead, are the two folks that got this started. So anyway, the only
question,
yeah. Okay, Malcolm, Jack, Bob Hart,
too.
Would you sit on that?
You know the laws.
Anyone else that wanted? Yeah. Bill, you have. Okay,
Bill?
So you got Malcolm, Bill, you are, okay, there, Jack, and Bob.
Is Grace on it as well?
Yes.
Okay, so it's Malcolm,
that's
Jack,
it. Grace,
Bob,
could be sort of
Bill, and Grace. Okay.
Bob, is Bob on?
Yes,
yes.
Bob, Art.
Five of us.
Yeah. One, two, three, four, five. Yeah. Okay, Jim?
How would you ever determine what the cost of doing that is without having, like, staff from any one of these counties trying to formulate about what that's going to cost for this kind of implementation?
Keith Kubik, the director for Douglas County, very well-versed guy in land use,
okay.
Kind of did an estimate run through at, with his experience, how much it would take to have his staff. You're basically looking at to do this and then rezone the entire, so you rezone the entire county, all the work that goes into it. He probably said they're in it over $220,000, his estimate. To have his staff. Yeah, to have his staff do and go through their whole county for 36, 15.
That seems like a lot of money. Take 350 and split it three ways.
Yeah, it does.
And that was their biggest concern after that. Cubics was the money. Because it was originally, I think it was $250,000.
Yeah. The other big problem is going to be sitting down, the three of them sitting down and coming up with an intergovernmental agreement. Because that has to be done before anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be.
This could be a 20-year plan.
Jack, I just hang up and then Malcolm.
The subcommittee is to define a plan. Because you're all talking about what's the cost of this. Nobody even knows what the hell we're going to do.
Yeah. Well, I think you take 3615 as it's written right now and as a committee and look at that in relationship to what we are,
yeah,
or who we are, and go from there. And I'm comfortable with that, and then bring that back to us. I'll try and find out, or somebody else can find out if they've got a schedule on it as far as the hearing process, because I heard it was going to be put into a hold for a while. It's not going
to
move.
I don't know if they were supposed to have a meeting on it with tomorrow.
Who's they?
The next committee of Salem.
It's a second reading or something. That's what I heard.
It came out as judiciary, and then it was going to ways and means.
Well, that's what's going to go for the money.
Yeah, that's what it was supposed to go for that. Because I contacted David after I talked to Dave Honeycutt, because Honeycutt got the same feeling that Josephine wasn't going to be a substantial player. And so I emailed David and said, you know, I'd be willing to go up and testify if it's just a matter of money. And he said, we're working on it. Don't bother.
So
I just...
Roger, from Josephine County, David, who's working on this? As a commissioner, who's the commissioner?
The director.
I think all three of them are considering it. I mean,
But there's been... I think somebody's been... Who's the liaison to the planning?
Dwight's our liaison.
So Dwight would be, my assumption would be is that Dwight would be the one communicating with Jackson and Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
And then from your staff, who's?
David.
David is, okay. So he's dealing with Kelly, or
Yeah, he's been talking with Keith, he's been talking with Kelly Matting, talking to the commissioners.
Malcolm?
This is probably going to sound cynical, but I would doubt that Jackson County and Douglas County would say, we don't even want you guys because that splits the pie three ways instead of two ways. Mm-hmm. It's just going to cost them more out of their own pockets if they include building
pay. Well, but they have to. There's no, they can't get away from it.
Oh, they can't?
No.
Yeah.
Oh. It's going to be Josephine County's call to stay out of it. It's okay. Not their call to keep them out.
All right.
It's amazing.
So
who else had a Grace?
How did the Dwight's retirement come to happen?
That'll be interesting.
They haven't appointed anybody.
No, I will tell you, I'm putting my name in. Doesn't mean anything.
I get a question. What happens, and I guess maybe staff can answer this, too. Let's say that 3615, we're not part of 3615, and all this that the subcommittee is doing and stuff brings this plan, where do we go with her recommendation, or is her recommendation done? If it's not attached to 3615, if it just...
But the only hope is that then, is whether or not you can connect with, say, Curry County, and do a regional, because it's going to allow two other
counties to combine.
Yeah. At least one, but not more than two additional regions. So Klamath and Deschutes could, and Josephine and Curry could.
I'm just wondering
and
how much
this may not
committee be has as an influence over the commissioners joining or not joining.
Very good. Okay. At this point. But it doesn't hurt. I think you probably have to give some input to them.
I do too.
Whether they take it and run with it, I don't know. It's another issue with, I don't know if that's something that the Planning Commission would want to take up at some point as well. They're not going to be meeting until in June, sometime in June.
June 20th.
Which may be too late then to. My point is the Planning Commission making a recommendation to the board too.
I guess what I was thinking, and because of the time constraints that you've got to deal with, Chris did a good job on her report. And I would think that just taking that report and handing it to the board tomorrow and saying, here, we think that this is enough basis to join 3615 that nothing like this would ever come about without joining that, because you have no choice to try and take it as the Lone Ranger.
We have time as far as the decision on the county's part.
Okay.
I mean, the issue of getting it through the legislature is one thing. But once it's done, then the next step is going to be for the counties to sit down and start having discussions. So we have, I mean, if this group sits...
You've got a little bit of time.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Jackson and Douglas and Josephine are not going to be sitting down before June and working out an intergovernment agreement. I don't think.
I think the thing that makes sense is we've got four people that are willing in the next month to be able to come back with a little bit harder, faster information so that we can listen to that report and go, do we need to do something right now, or are we just wasting our time? And what that might be is to do what you said. Say, we think 3615 is important. Here's some fodder for you to realize why it's important. And but it may be,
Well, I think
the wind anyway. Yeah. You know, and the thing is, in terms of even if the whole process worked to our satisfaction, it could be 5 or 6 years down the line before there was any real changes. By the time you go through the intergovernmental agreement,
this thing is only good for 2 years.
Yeah.
It has to be completed in two years.
By any of beginning July 1st, 2013.
Well, I thought
upon receipt of petition, selectively.
Well, anyway, my recommendation is we've got a subcommittee. Let's hear from them.
So we'll hear from the subcommittee next meeting, which is June 13th.
Yeah. Grace is the chair.
Yeah. Okay. She's the leader.
Okay, so I'll email everybody.
Can we get a copy of the bill to you folks? Do you have a copy of it? Is that the newest one? I got this on
the
email.
One, the A.M. Gross.
Yeah, that's this one. Okay. Yeah.
So we give that to Ann, and she can send it.
I can do that. It's online. It's very easy to pull
up. Okay, so why don't you get it for those folks?
Okay.
So, Adrian Gross is going missing religion court?
Yeah.
3615.
Okay.
The thing is, we've got an open door, and we're like saying, well, you won't get far through that door, but what the hell? The door's open.
Yeah,
let's try.
Try it. Right.
Yeah.
If you don't try, you're not going to get anywhere close to that door.
Okay, our next item on the agenda is Article 22, Type 1 Review. I haven't had a chance to do anything on that, so I don't know if there was any additional. My issue there was that, and we don't call it Type 1 in ours. It's an administrative, what's it called?
Ministerial.
Ministerial.
And so I'm not prepared to talk about it, that unless somebody else has some comments they want to make at this point. He put a pre-application for land use applications. And I think that was the other issue. I think there's if you do a type 1 or an administrative thing as to whether or not there's a pre-application process. I believe there is in our system, and I would be making a recommendation, at least at this point, that that should not be a requirement on type 1. Type 1s are check the boxes and it's done. And they should be pretty simplistic, so they shouldn't require that. And that would be a change in, I don't know whether that's a policy issue or an actual ordinance.
Well, code change, because I think that our code says everything goes
through. I hadn't had a chance to look at it twice. Yeah. Anyway, that would be my one thought, is that it does expedite moving the type 1 or the check-the-box type of thing quicker. Mm-hmm. And but when you start moving into a more complicated one and the type 2s and type 3s or type 4s, then that changes some of that. But there may be some additional discussion on it. I just don't have any more that I can add to that. Bob?
The Jackson County system says that type 3, which is like a subdivision, and type 4, like a zone change, has to have a pre-app. But things like a forest dwelling, or a medical hardship does not require it. It says you can voluntarily ask for one, but it's not required for a type 1 or type 2. The Josephine County Code says everything has to have a pre-app.
Well, I'll do some more work on it and some more, but give it some thought, because I think there's some possibilities that maybe we can make some changes. Again, the whole point was to help staff with those folks that didn't understand the process and fill out the applications, to give them some relief on the other side of the process. And it was to help the applicant that didn't know how to do it to get that information and make the system smoother and better. And so that's how it got started, was just trying to make the thing move quicker and faster. And it's gotten bogged down in some cases to where it doesn't move as quickly. Maybe it's changed now when there isn't a whole lot of business going on. I don't know. But just give it some more thought, and we'll put it on the agenda for next week. Bill?
On back to this letter, it's a list of
what is required to have for the application.
Oh, okay. I know, to turn it over.
That's sort of that we're thinking about scrubbing that, or if that makes sense.
Now, this is a memo from, he's talking about the memo from David Weckner on May 9th.
Oh, this is a list of
pre-application.
I think he's just calling everything out, how it works.
Yeah,
out.
This one do not need a pre-application.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all pretty minor things.
Okay. Well, let's I'll put it back on the agenda for next week, and we can go from there. I might just for the heck of it. That was a test to see if everybody was listening. You're the only one.
As long as you're here June 13th, we're fine.
Okay. Property line adjustment and pre-apps planning staff. And there's a memo here from David. And Roger, have you got anything that you want to add to this? If not...
No, I've done it. I'm not sure if everybody had a chance to read it, but the gist of the memo is Jackson, Josephine County requires, with its property line adjustments, a final plat map to memorialize it, if you will. That's not required in statute. I don't know where it came from. Maybe Bob knows the history. It took me for surprise when I came over from Jackson County because property line adjustments don't require that. But Josephine County, for whatever reason, we've done it. There's probably pros and cons. There's probably even a reason why it came about. But this memo from the planning director basically kind of calls out that requirement and essentially brief discussions with some local surveyors regarding why or why not. I think David's stance is he's used to not doing them, so he doesn't really see an issue with having the final partition plat for property line adjustment. And then the other thing that was kind of discussed, because we had a local surveyor come in, is in adverse possession cases, in terms of should a person not, or should they go through some kind of way to memorialize that so that there's record of it, so it doesn't create a hardship down the road, potentially. I can tell you, in practice, as a planner at the counter, I think it would be a good scenario to have some type of way to have some kind of notation known to the planning department that this has occurred. While it may not be required, in terms of practice, let me tell you, as a planner, the scariest thing is when you got somebody, a real estate agent at the counter, that wants to have you, as a planner for Josephine County, tell me, is this a legal lot? If you don't know for sure, you don't throw it out there. So I could see adverse possession cases that do not go through the planning department. They just get their judgment. They do whatever they do to memorialize it or meet their judgment order. A few years down the line, somebody new comes in, buys it, and we're looking at it at the counter. I'm going to tell you, as a planner, and almost every planner will, if they don't understand, there's no documentation to show how that changed. We're not gonna give you the benefit of saying yes or no. We're gonna say I don't know, and it's gonna take further review. So I guess what to come away with this memo is to think about. And I can't tell you, in the past we have done property line. We just did one, Paradise Vista. The guys got hit with an adverse possession. Two brand new 5-acre lots that Mr. Thorpe had, he lost an adverse possession case, and they came in. They voluntarily went through and did it because they wanted it reflected, so when he's selling lots, it doesn't put a flag up. So they went through, and I can tell you, any planner came in cold to that, all of a sudden seeing every lot is 5 acres in Paradise Ranch, Paradise Vista subdivision. Everyone's exactly 5 acres. All of a sudden, these two are 4.5. That's going to, I don't know what happened, I'm not vouching. That's going to put a time crunch on lenders, people buying it, real estate agents, because if we say it is and it isn't, we're the bad guys, we're in some problems. So you're going to have every planner in the world is going to be tentative on that. If you don't have that documentation, you're not throwing it out there that it's, yeah, it's legal, go ahead. So that's the one thing I would say, read over. But that's what that memo is really about, in a nutshell. I think partition plat requirement, while it's nice, I, as a planner, don't see it being a big deal. Peter Allen, I think Max Hall, they had some pros and cons about it, but that's essentially kind of, I think what David is throwing out there is that he's all for kind of getting rid of this partition final plat requirement for property line adjustments. As long as there's some way that it's memorialized, it can be tracked, because, like I said, that gives us the peace of mind to say, yes, it's a legal lot, and sure, you can build on it. That's the magic question. Can we develop this property?
Well, I don't understand why, in one case, the adverse possession, it's important for you to have it on record so that you can answer somebody at the counter, is this a legal lot, which I understand that. And then you're saying on the property line adjustment, as long as it's over in the courthouse, it's not that big a deal. Isn't it the same thing? You're going to have somebody standing there going, where's my property line? Because it applies to setbacks and everything else.
You're absolutely right. Property line adjustments, there is some documentation that they're required to provide and record, and that shows up. And we would have physically gone through a property line adjustment. We'd have that as a file. If it's an adverse possession, the boundary is adjusted, and they just go and not even record it, maybe. And we have no idea. So we pull this property up, and it's got a whole different shape. It's never had any kind of planning action on it, but we see in the old maps it was this shape. Now it's this or it's less. That's going to throw a flag up to me personally as a planner, because I'm not going to stick my neck out and say, yeah, it looks totally developable. So the adverse possession is just a scary thing on the planning side, because I'm not saying we need to do a full property line adjustment, give us an application and fees, but I think there should be some way to have it so that it's documented. That's what the case is, so that as a planner, everybody wants to have that verification from the planning department that this lot's developable or it's legal. And if I can't make that determination right at the counter without some kind of path to follow how it got there, you're going to hear from almost every planner out there. I don't know. It's going to take further review. Yes?
What do you need? What do you need to know to tell somebody to leave a lot? You just have to have it on the professor's role map, or what? I mean, you're not going to do a legal search.
No, essentially, I tell you, Josephine County Assessment does a very good job of when they started with their deed tracking. They did something that I don't know why it didn't get thought of, or why they didn't do it in Jackson County. But we will have the documents that talk about when it was created, warranty deed, and the date, so every planner knows the timelines for zoning. So that's one aspect. And the huge, crucial piece that I've found, because it's a nightmare in Jackson County, is that there is an acreage associated with it. And any time that acreage changes, it follows down with, you know, 20, 30 deeds down the line. That's really how we can determine it. We'll take a look at the, and also we have assessor maps that go back to 73 when zoning started, 81, 85 in the current. We can also backtrack, well, it was there in 73, it's the same size, same shape, yeah, it's legal. Jackson County, those deeds are just called out. You know, I'm sure you've seen the meets and bounds description.
Sure.
And you don't know what it's describing out, how big it is, so it's a real scary issue in Jackson County. Everybody, you know, that's worked over there. You imagine questions, is this a legal lot? And every planner over there is going to say, I don't know.
So is it possible that we got an adverse possession case settled by court? I assume the court's going to describe the new lines. Can you then make those appear on your maps based on the court? It looks like you get a lot of adverse possession cases, right?
Well, the ones that we
I'm saying without a survey, you've got the court's done it. The court hasn't surveyed it. It doesn't have to be surveyed.
If it gets recorded, it should go through the assessor's office, because they're going to change ownership because of the recorded judgment against it. And what we need to do is to put a code provision in here to say, how do you deal with those adverse possessions? Do you recognize them or not? And when it goes through the assessor's office and it changes, then a copy should be sent to planning so you can update your record.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm all for just some way, shape, or form so I can tell somebody and know why that it's changed. And if you come up with a counter saying, Jim, this is a legal lot, tell your guy he's getting a steal. Buy it quick.
Let me do this.
I like your position.
Let's do this. We've got the document. There are some potential recommendations here. I think we can take some kind of action next week. Is that start next month? I'm sorry. I only want to come next week and say that.
I
think if I do, eventually I'm going to convince you to show up. Next month. So we'll put this as an action item to take some action as a committee based upon the documents here. So. Does that work for you?
I'm just curious though, one thing, Roger, is Max or Thorpe going to have to go back through and... Because wasn't there a plat of subdivision on that? Will he have to go back through, have it resurveyed, and then come back before the...
No. He just did a property line adjustment.
Just a line adjustment.
But they wanted it memorialized because, you know, he was already upset and had issues, and he didn't want any more to come down the pipes. He slowly...
They didn't tell him you had to combine those two lots so there wouldn't be an undersized lot.
Well, we basically said what you're getting at is, you know, 5-acre lot now is less than you're creating on. Forming code frowned upon that. That's what that adverse possession did in our case, is that we just made the case out. We were honoring this verdict, and that's the reason why.
Cool. Well, when you have lots where you take a part of a roadway easement or something, and that makes it less than a full, say, 5-acre lot, and but it still counts as a 5-acre lot, so there's precedent for doing that.
Yeah, but the road was already there. Was created in a subdivision.
But,
I don't think.
In other words, 5 acres isn't always 5 acres. Sometimes it's 4.
Yeah, exactly. You're right.
Or less.
So you say not to exceed 5 acres.
There are about.
Okay, that should take care of that, number 6. And we've already dealt with House Bill 3516. I think there's been enough discussion on that.
3615.
3615.
3615.
It says 3516 right
there. There's
Carol Chance wrong.
Okay. Nice going, Ann. We better review
3515. I want to tell you, you all passed the test. You know which bill it was. It was a test. Matters from committee members. Anybody have matters? Go ahead.
I've got something that I'd like to get on the agenda for next month. Mm-hmm. I can't speak to it because I haven't really experienced it, but Tom Toby, who's a builder here in town, Toby Ryan, has run into it a couple of times, and it has to do with erosion control reports for county property. It says... if any development of the property will disturb areas that exhibit slopes that are 15% or greater or involve granitic soils, a proposed erosion control plan pursuant to Article 83 shall be included. No disturbance shall occur until the plan is approved. Mm-hmm. But they say they do this for a single lot or a subdivision. If the subdivision does, he shows each house site as being defined, then if somebody comes in later and decides that there was an opportunity to have the house somewhere else and they want to move it, they have to pay for an erosion control plan again, even though it was already done. And then if they haven't identified these sites originally, then each lot, as it's developed, will have to do an individual erosion control plan. And right now the going rate for these is about $2,500 from the soils engineer.
Plus
so
the county fees.
Plus the county fee is $675 for a technical review. So Tom's feeling is, and he can express it better, that there's some double charging going on there for the same lots, and he seems to think that he's got a better way to do it. So
is that a policy issue, or is that something?
That is a planning commission decision. Some of these subdivisions come through, and they're showing these are the locations, and that's how they get approved at planning commission level. So that's what some of the conditions say. That's what they're held to. They want to move it, then they're changing the approved location, and typically that's what's required to change the location is erosion control. Almost every new subdivision that comes through now is, you know, in the more challenging terrain. So once again, that's something that we see at planning commission level, and it's usually listed in the development CC&Rs also, that every new lot, because they'll come through with just 5 acres, a preliminary plan shows I can at least make the driveway grade per fire code. And that's about the extent of what we require in terms of each individual lot requiring that they can build the pad, the erosion control is going to work for that pad, there's going to be no problems. It's simply, we got enough room, we'll be able to make our 50-foot buffers, it's not over 40%, and here's a preliminary driveway that shows we'll be able to meet the fire percentage slope. at final review, where now you've got the approval, you're ready to build, that's where you come through, and then you do your full-blown erosion control. So a lot of, I see Toby in there a lot, and a lot of these, they don't do individual erosion controls, which you can understand why, for each single lot in the preliminary review. That's always kicked towards, now we've got the approval, we showed tentatively and theoretically this is going to meet the code, now each individual lot is literally going to be developed. They do their individual erosion control for their lot. That's how those come about.
So it's based upon a condition from the planning
commission. Yeah, and so Tom's probably coming through working on, lots in a subdivision that was a requirement because, they showed that they could get a driveway in there based on the topography, but they didn't actually do a full erosion control. They just kind of preliminary, the slopes, it's going to work. We'll be able to meet engineering specs and we can get a driveway in. That's as far as we get planning commission-wise. Demonstrate it's feasible that you can do it. Now, after you've gotten your approval, you've physically got the lots, you're coming in one by one to now literally build the house. That's when you do your full-blown, more exact erosion control plan.
So the option would be, rather than charging, but there's already been one fee charged, a $600 fee. Has that fee any been charged before? The county fee.
$675
is what you're asking. The subdivision's approved and done, so typically when they come in for these erosion control, it's typically erosion control and fire safety plan, just packaged in one bundle. If they come in with the erosion control plan done, we typically take it right through the pre-app and everything's met, everybody says everything's there, it makes sense. Next step is to a development permit. That's the typical route because most of the guys we deal with, they understand they've done this before, so they get Galley Group or whoever, they know they're doing an individual lot erosion control, do the fire safety, it's pretty much a done deal, it's got everything. It just comes through the pre-app or our engineer folks kind of sign off that, seems reasonable, meets engineering requirements, fire guys don't have any beef over it, straight to development permit. So a lot of these are done and approved, and then guys like Tom Toby come and start individually developing, and so while he may think he's being double charged, the reality is that entire 25-lot subdivision, they didn't do individual erosion controls for each lot. They just showed a feasibility that it's not so steep, the creek's there, we can meet stuff. Prove that when you're coming in for your actual development permit. That's when this erosion control comes in. So a guy like Tom, who maybe wasn't involved in the subdivision to begin with, he's just bidding out on developing individual lots. It might seem like, wasn't this looked at in the subdivision? Gosh, we're doing another erosion control plan? Not really, because now it's an individual one for each lot, specifically.
But that $675 is for technical plan review.
Yeah.
$650
becomes a technical plan if, say, for instance, a guy comes in that just on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, look, here's where I'm going to put my house, the driveway's going to come, and we don't have the information about the topography, any erosion control. Typically, that's when we'll say, well, you don't have anything, so you got to go to tech review because we don't have the information. We need more, better information. So that's where the tech review comes in. But guys like Tom Toby, I'm sure Gordy, comes in, they understand the erosion fire safety, they get a guy to do it up front, it just goes through the pre-app and then to development permit.
So that's really a charge of only pre-app is $375 and then $275 for the development,
for the development permit.
So that's where that $650 is not involved in that particular erosion control.
All right, well,
you want it on the agenda?
Well, leave it on the agenda. Let me run it by Tom. I'm not sure whether I representing him correctly here, but it may be that we're talking
so
correct.
Let's put it on the agenda.
If he wants to come and talk more about it, otherwise I'll tell you straight.
I'm just saying, invite Tom to come and explain the problem, because he didn't answer the problem that I thought I heard
from
Gordon expressed. That Gordon spoke to, they got their erosion plan based on this site projection, and then somebody bought the lot, and then that buyer decided, well, I don't really want the house there. I want it over here. And then they're demanding a second erosion.
Well, if you're changing well, that erosion control plan's out the door.
Well, yeah, we'll put it on the agenda. We'll put on the agenda, and you can invite him to come.
Well, and honestly, what I tell guys is don't limit yourself to a specific home site because right. You've seen it in planning commission. Sometimes that gets treated as those are subject to those locations, and then final plat comes through, and well, we're stuck to these home sites. Yeah, don't put it on there. Show feasibility, but don't limit yourself to it.
I guess a question I would have is, do you need to do a pre-app to submit in a tech plan review for a erosion sediment control plan? Yes or no?
Yeah, because I'm not the guy. I'm not an engineer to look at it. We're shipping it out to agencies to look at it.
So you paid $375 for the privilege of submitting an application and pay another $650 for somebody to actually look at the plan. So that's one. If you're going to submit a tech review, is the $650 or $675 just not enough to cover the thing, or is it double charging to file a pre-app and then a tech review as well? Because the code says if you're on more than 15% slope or you're on granitic soil, you have to do one. When having a pre-app doesn't make any sense. It just says you've got to do a tech review to submit an engineered plan. Your engineer draws it up, you bring it in and try and drop it off. And if they say, well, you've got to do a pre-app for us to see if this tech review needs to get out, and they submit things out, and then they say, oh, and yes, you do have to do an engineered plan. You go, well, I already knew that. So that would be a frustrating part for me if I'm hearing what Gordy's.
Well, let's invite the gentleman to come in and we can get this
picture. Yeah, here from his side.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Any other matters from committee members? Grace.
I also have some ideas on recommendation on the farm. Clarifications, I have some ideas that don't stand the chance, to be changed. So I'll avoid them because like forest practices, the national and state trend is towards the previous growth in farms are under 50 acres and over 1,000 acres. And in between, farms are shifted.
Well, I think this will be one of the topics you can throw into that subcommittee discussion because that's part of what 3615
is. That's 3615 because it's farm and forest. Yeah. It's not just forest. So that discussion needs to occur there as well. Because I've got the same concerns. You look at the average farm size of Josephine County, it's below 20 acres. And the state statute says you've got to have at least 80 acres.
Yeah, I've got that data too, just like I have.
I think that would fit perfectly into the discussion. Any other concerns, issues? I do have one, at least one. And I read in the sneak preview about the issue on vacation rentals. And this one is, I think it's statewide, but it impacted in Jackson County because of that place up on West Jones Creek, I guess. I thought it was on West Evans Creek. They said West Jones on it, and that didn't make sense to me. Anyway, looking at it, it's not most listed in any of our resource zones. And I guess my question would be, if we added vacation rentals as a conditional use, what would happen?
Can't do it.
What if we did it?
It's not listed.
Well, it's not listed in state law.
Yeah,
and there's a list of uses that are permitted.
So if you just put in a text amendment to do it, VLCD staff would come back and say, that's not authorized by state law, and if you put it in, we're going to find you.
So is anybody that rents, if I own a home out there and I want to rent it rather than live in it, I'm in violation of state law then?
As a
vacation
rental.
There's a lot of people doing it.
Let me tell you,
there's a lot of people doing it.
It doesn't make sense that just because the state doesn't list something, means that you just can't do it. Jackson is a state, which I think the answer to the yes, but if they list it, we've got to stick to that. You can't add something that they haven't even addressed, and just because the state hasn't addressed that leaves the local jurisdictions completely hobbled. to do something that resembles something else that's close to, you know, isn't there some flexibility in it? It seems to me that if the state does not forbid it, you could change the local code to allow it.
Okay. It's a pattern of government these days that if there's not a statute that says you can do it,
you can't law.
And that's the same thing with the BLM is trying to get through on the use of roads. Unless a road is posted that you can use it, public,
you can't.
Isn't that sort of a CYA?
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
Malcolm.
So is there something in state law that says I can rent out the rentals that I've built or am I in violation for these 20 years or so? It's not vacation rentals, but it's rentals.
Well, if you follow the logic the way it is, you're in violation of the law.
Right.
Because you're supposed to live on the property, you're not supposed to be renting it out.
So we shouldn't have any rentals in the state.
Jack, I see you going this way.
Who's enforcing it? That's what I like to
say. Well, nobody is, but I mean, this whole thing is being highlighted now.
Oh, I know it is.
And there is a real financial impact across the state of Oregon. I mean, it isn't just.
Sure.
Isn't just.
I mean, I like your idea. I just don't know how you get there.
My own thought is if you get it and just challenge it and let's see where it goes.
Well, why don't somebody challenge it from Sun River? I mean, you know,
well, it's in a woodlot resource, and one of the things I would be careful is Speak Pretty doesn't always get the things correct. The other thing is some of the things that Jackson County does, I don't always agree with either. That they do different interpretations in other jurisdictions. So this guy may have gotten hung up in Jackson County, and he may not have gotten hung up in Josephine, just because the way Jackson is interpreting their code, because I did a farm thing that the guy wanted to raise chickens and dress them out and sell them, and Jackson County said that's a commercial operation in conjunction with the farm use, even though it says raising, harvesting, and marketing is a normal farm practice. So Jackson County could be overstepping what they're doing, and Sneak Preview could not be telling the whole truth or the whole story.
Well, have we run into it? Where I was going was to find out, are we running into it in the Josephine County?
I've never had anybody come in and ask to do
about
it.
A vacation rentals.
Well, see, I think what drove it over there was that you had a neighbor that
complained about it.
It's tested in the courts.
Yeah. Malcolm?
It looks to me like if you're going to rent a house out, I rent some out month to month, I rent some out annually. If somebody rents one out by the weekend, what's the difference? It's renting a house for a set period of time.
I agree.
Don't see I'm making a joke.
That's a vacation mini storage.
I guess I'm bringing it up because I think it's a topic we ought to look at and see whether or not there's an avenue for us, and maybe have staff do a little bit of research for us and see if there's an avenue that we can use. And it would be in the resource zones is primarily what we'd be looking at if we were to add it as a conditional use. I mean, if you start looking at all the conditional uses in there, a vacation rental is really a nice thing compared to what I saw in some of those conditional uses.
Maybe it's better to apologize.
I mean, one guy, I guess in that article, he said, one party said, well, all I did is go in and apply for a private park, and I'm okay because now I have a private park with a house on it that I can rent out to people.
I recommend a book called, it's about 20 years old now at least, called The Loss of Common Sense. Have you read that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, I lost my long
time. It's about over-regulation, you know, needing to control, like the higher-ups, like the state, feel like they, and the feds, and everybody feel like they have to regulate, because it's so lawyer-bound, and that if you don't regulate, things will get out of control, and if it's out of control, it's going to be chaotic, and you don't trust the local jurisdictions, and it's all that doesn't make sense after a while. Anyway, it's a great book.
Well, I think I'll put on the agenda just for our discussion, and I don't know where it could go or not go. But
yeah.
Jack? You might think, in listening to Malcolm, deciding with him, this might be a sleeping dog.
You're not kidding.
Well, and I don't know whether there's any action at the legislative level to do anything with this point in time. Have you heard anything?
Not that I've heard of. It's an interesting one because there's a lot of these over the coast in particular. I don't know anybody that's actually looked into it. And again, like you, if Roger's not seeing it over the counter as a problem, people asking about it.
So leave it alone?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I tell them, don't even talk to me about it. Okay.
Be on good terms with your neighbors.
We'll all be on the agenda.
Well, in most zones, a spring conditional approves conditional use. So you just, your rentals are just weekend wilderness schools.
Look at what Siskiyou Field Institute did out there in the valley. Took a whole ranch and turned into a school. Completely got away from the original use as far as agriculture. They got schools out there now instead.
And the church's name on it, they can't touch
it. Some people get away with some of those things. Anyway, that's on that one. The only other issue is you all got a copy of the letter, the draft letter, that I propose you send to the commissioners. Is there any, do you feel there need to be any changes?
Yes.
Okay.
You forgot the word is.
No, I put it in there.
You put it in.
It's in there.
Good. You passed the test.
No, she didn't pass the test.
Oh, she didn't?
Second time because it's changed.
Oh, okay.
Well, I didn't see the second time.
Well, I left it on attention.
Thank you.
To see if anybody pick up on it.
Yeah.
How many people ever read the San Francisco Chronicle? Have you ever read it?
Yeah.
It's the most mistake. It's got more mistakes than that, and you can shake a stick at it. And I knew somebody that was in the editing side, and they said that they did that on purpose to have people call to see if they were actually doing
their newspaper.
Come on, now that's a little reach. That was after a few drinks, but
girl,
we
don't read your letters. We just go through looking for mistakes.
Oh, that's okay. Like that.
If
that's okay,
grammar.
The one problem we've run into is that the way that order was written requires me to present the recommendation to a joint meeting by the Planning Commission and the Commissioners. And I talked with Sandy Castanelli last week to see if maybe we don't need to do that. If I went ahead and just submitted it to the Commissioners then would have a meeting with their staff and go through that, our recommendations, and then make a determination I would go to the Planning Commission so that that's a process. Rather than trying to call in the Planning Commission, and all I'm going to do is hand them the letter. There's not going to be any discussion because they aren't going to have it at that point to discuss. So I'm hoping that that will work. And I haven't had a chance to talk to David yet. Hopefully I can talk to him tomorrow. So anyway, well, that'll be our process.
Why don't you copy the Planning Commission numbers so they at least know what's in the letter?
Well, I think that's up to the commissioners. I mean, I understand what you're saying. It's, and I don't know their communication systems. That's my. Sometimes you can get your nose in the wrong spot because somebody doesn't like what you did on something like that.
Well, transparency is a real.
Yeah.
It's government. It's just a given.
And right now, I don't think there's a chairman on the Planning Commission, is there? Who is the?
The vice chair.
Stan Holt.
He's the vice chair.
Oh, he's the vice chair.
He's the vice chair.
He's volunteered to be chair. We haven't elected him yet, have we?
No, it was tabled.
Okay. I just have a question. You know, Roger, you sat through most of these meetings and stuff. How do you think that this process is coming along as far as your observation?
Well, I'm a realist, so, these are all going to have to go through public hearing and, you know, the affected agencies are going to come out, so fire guys, things like that. So just we'll have to just go through that process. I see where everybody's looking to go with these, but then there are some agencies that have a vested interest that haven't been involved. So we're just going to have to kind of see how that goes. And then, of course, it's a public hearing, so you know, people are going to come out of the woodworks, and it's going to be a long process.
Well, any one of us on this committee who believes that come out looking like we recommend
it. No, but what was that? It's common sense. Yes.
It's interesting. I've talked with the Klamath County folks, and they're in the world hurt. They're worse off than we are over here. They got two planners and their planning directors, all they have in a administrative person. But they were wanting to start a process. They did start a process to try to review their comp plan and land development ordinance. They had to lay the guy off that was originally starting on it, and that's gone away. And made a recommendation to the Board of Realtors over there that they create a committee similar to what we have. And we sat down. I was over there with a planning director and president of the Realtors Association, and Bill Adams is the planning director. And he actually was pleading that we don't create the committee because he didn't have the staff or the money to be able to do anything. But what he did do is commit to the fact that if the realtors created committees and sat down and did reviews of specific areas, and he would give them the items of most importance that needed to be dealt with, and that he would then take that and move through the process. So over in Klamath County, what they're going to wind up doing is using a committee that basically has been created by the Board of Realtors, and they're going to bring people in, you know, other than just themselves. And they've got Article 69, which is similar to Article 76, that they have issues with. But that process is how they're going to do it, is that outside committee through the Realtors will then provide recommendations to the planning director directly. He then will review it and move it into the planning commission and their process. So it's really, I mean, I don't know if Bill Adams hasn't been around very long, but that's another interesting process versus this process. And then Jackson County hired a professional. And I don't know how they think they paid about $80,000 for the person. I have never seen
professionals.
I have never seen the panel reports.
Who is the professional?
I can't remember now. I got a report. He gave me a report.
The consultant.
Yeah.
$80,000.
Something like that. Yeah.
Wait,
anyway, just a couple of items there. Any other matters? We got to keep going. We've got another half hour, so. Any other matters? Nobody from the public is here. Our next meeting is June 13th. I'm sorry, Bob, you didn't look like one.
Oh, yeah.
The one thing we didn't cover was the Turner Scott issue. I don't know. Have we ever received anything from you guys on what we should or shouldn't do?
You're my liaison, my man.
What we'll do is we'll put this over to next week. Give you a chance to think about.
Next month.
Next month. Thank you.
It's never too late to do it.
Yeah, okay.
I was going to make a proposal that we ask the commissioners to write 80,000 by however many members we have.
Yeah.
Give it to us. I mean, you're consulting.
Yeah, let's show that.
Of
course, we're going to tell you.
There may wind up being some money because I don't know where they're heading with the Soretti agreement. That's about $75,000 of lottery money. And I've heard a couple of things from somebody that they may want to put that into the planning side of it, that would help generate economic activity. That was a discussion that was probably about 3 weeks ago. So I haven't heard any more on that. So
too much common sense.
Yeah.
Never play.
Yeah. I wouldn't bet on it.
The Kentucky Mile is just it can't be done.
Okay, I feel bad that we're not going all this time.
Oh, you feel something else?
Can the my subcommittee meet so we can after this so we can arrange a time to meet?
I would say someplace else.
She's got to lock the
gate. I have to lock the gate, and I want everybody gone.
They said a time of day. We're
I want you to leave now.
Meeting adjourned.
Okay.